This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Listeners, to yet another edition of the Sellers Points podcast, our first of 2017. I am, of course, your illustrious host, Russell Sellers, and I am here with my great, wonderful ginger bear co-host, Mr. Kelly Poole. Hey, Kelly. How you doing, man?
I'm good.
Still kind of struggling after the New Year's Eve shenanigans?
Sort of. I mean, not that there was a whole lot of shenanigans for me for New Year's, but, you know, another year down. Let's hope that 2017 is, let's hope it's a good year for everybody.
Well, it certainly started off on a rousing note for both of us, I think, because we both did the exact same thing for New Year's. We went home, maybe hung out with a couple of friends, had some drinks, and didn't really do a whole lot. I swear, right after midnight, I was like, all right, that's it, going to bed.
Yeah, right along with you.
We're old, man. But that's just the long and short of it. We're too old for all this staying up nonsense. I let all the those young whippersnappers go on to the downtown fireworks show, and I was like, yeah, that's all right. I think I'm just going to go home with, you know, my buddy Garner, who came up for a visit. We went home and we watched Aliens, and you know what? That was a great way to ring in 2017.
But sounds like it.
It was. That was the ending I wanted. I didn't care anything about all the big partying. Not that there weren't some fun times with some pretty drunk folks who just couldn't help themselves during the Alabama and Washington game, and, which, by the way, ended exactly as I wanted it to. A nice roll tide to all my fellow Alabama fans out there. We get to look forward to a national title game next week, rematch against Clemson, which diminishes my enjoyment of that game just a little bit because I was hoping for a rematch against Ohio State, but, you know, what can you do? They got completely shut out, and that just goes to show you who was really overrated coming into all of this. But but I digress. Sorry, Jenny. I had to take my shot at Ohio State while I had it. But anyway, man, sounds like we're both a little, you know, tired of 2016. I think, aren't you?
Yeah, I was pretty well done with it. I mean, lost a lot of good people, and you know, I was listening to a comedian that I like to listen to from time to time. He was making a commentary about, you know, how everyone is blaming 2016 for all these deaths, and it is kind of silly to do that, but when you deal with, you know, loss of people, and sometimes those people are kind of part of your life to an extent, like Carrie Fisher, for example. I mean, yeah, you grew up with her, and it was sad that she passed, and it's just like a part of your childhood just kind of is a little diminished now, and you got to have something to blame. And yeah, it's death, it's life. I mean, she lived a hard life and struggled a lot, and, but you know, it is what it is, and I think everyone poking fun at a year, it's just a way to deal with it, you know.
It is. It's our way of coping with all this, you know, loss of another piece of our childhood, or our individual childhoods being gone. But it is silly to say, oh, it's all this just this year. And like, no, people die every year. That's true.
Yeah.
And there will be more like childhood heroes who are likely to pass in 2017 because, well, we've all gotten older. And that's something that happens. Although we in the comic book world, we did lose a couple of big heroes who were not old by any stretch. Losing Darwin Cook hit me particularly hard.
Oh yeah,
that was the big one for me. I mean, losing Steve Dillon was huge too. I didn't have the personal connection to him that some of our other friends and fellow podcasters have to him, but I do appreciate his work. He's one of the best artists that has ever worked in comics. But
yeah, it did a lot of different types of comics, and did not only I think a lot of people know him from Preacher, but had a really good Punisher run. I want to say I think he did. Didn't he do the Dakin run of Wolverine?
That may have been one of his. Like I said,
I can't remember. But
I'm not a big fan of Steve Dillon. I won't claim that. I will say that I like his work. Mm-hmm. Certainly love Preacher, and the bit of his Punisher work that I've seen does seem like it would be something up my alley. Like I should finally sit down and read that Punisher run. But that's, for me, it was like losing Darwin Cook was the one that hit the hardest, because his work really changed the way that I viewed comics and viewed comic book storytelling in that regard. But talking about all the terrible things that happened in 2016, that's not what this show is going to be about today. We're moving past that. We are going to talk about all the good things that came from 2016, because, you know, there were. 2016 was not a complete crap year. We had quite a bit of cool things that happened, as well as some really good comic series that started up, some that experienced amazing turnarounds. We have a lot to be happy about from 2016, and I think that's what this show is going to be dedicated to, because, folks, instead of us doing our typical top and bottom five for this month, which is what we would normally do, we decided to change the format on you guys a little bit. This episode is going to be nothing but Kelly and I's individual top five ongoing comics of 2016, and then in the second half, we're going to get we're going to give you our individual top five original graphic novels, one shots, and miniseries. Now, those are all a single category, of course. Now, that's a bit different from what we normally do, because we would normally tell you, what we've what we read from the last couple of weeks, what we thought was good, maybe what we thought wasn't. But we're skipping all that. This is going to be an actual special edition of the Sellers Points podcast, which is something that, sometimes gets said a lot, but it's like, huh, that just seems like a regular show. No, this time we're actually doing a special edition. And the show that's going to come after this one is also going to be a special edition, but we will be returning to the normal format come February. But for January, we decided to just do something different, because we wanted to look back at 2016 and say, you know what, we all know that it was a rough year for a lot of people, a lot of bad things happened, but there were some really good things too. So why don't we celebrate the good things? Why don't we talk about what Kelly and I both loved and try to shift the focus a little bit to the bright spots, the little golden nuggets within the turd. And that's where we're gonna pick up, because Kelly, I know you've read a few of these lists that have come out already, because it's that time of year when it seems everybody's making their end of year lists, and they're talking about what was good, what was bad, most of their top comics, everything from your top five list to top 25 list. And I've seen it come from everybody from IO9 to BuzzFeed of all places, talking about their favorite comics. And I don't know if you've experienced this, but some of it seems like it's hipster for hipster's sake, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, are they really enjoying this stuff, or are they just putting it out there because they want some credibility? I don't know.
Yeah.
But some of it seems remarkably out of touch with actual comic book fans. And as you and I discussed off air, we were like, we are not like those folks. We are comic book fans. We have quite a few years of experience reading books and trying out things from various publishers. We know what we like, and we actually spend time talking with quite a few comic book fans. So I feel like we're pretty well in touch with the fandom, and can speak on what we think are the best books out there. What are the best representative books for fandom at large? So that's. But again, this is just mine and Kelly's opinion.
Yeah,
These books. This is not like definitive. These are the best books ever. We can't really speak on that. This is just what we think.
And yeah, it's our personal preference, you know, as far as books go, because everybody, I mean, the comic book community, I mean, we're a lot of difference. There's a lot of difference in what people like and what they don't like. I mean, comic book fans are really opinionated. So, I mean, we
never.
Yes.
That's crazy talk. I don't know what he's talking about. That's just our opinion, and it's not for us to say.
Yeah.
But that being said, I figure we can just get into it. Let's just jump right into our top five ongoing comic series of 2016. And like I said before, folks, unlike our normal top fives, where Kelly and I come to a consensus, we have each made our own lists. And we're kind of adopting the HTF format, if you will, where we will talk about our number five, and then we'll move to four and so on. So let's just jump right into it. And of course, these are ongoing comics. These are not minis, original graphic novels, or one-shots. These are all series that are either continuing, or when they debuted, they were billed as ongoing series. And yes, we'll go ahead and tell you, some of these books may have been canceled by now, but whenever they came out, whenever they began being published, they were billed as ongoing series. So that's the format for each of these. But anyway, Kelly, I think we should start with you. What was your number five book of 2016?
It was Blue Beetle.
The blue from the Rebirth era.
Yes.
DC Rebirth Blue Beetle. That was by Keith Giffen. And who's the artist on that book?
Oh, I don't have mine. I don't have my stuff with me, so I...
Oh, it's Scott Collins.
Yeah.
Scott Collins is the artist on that book. They've worked together a time or two before, but what is the premise of Blue Beetle, and what is it about that book that got it to be on your list?
Well, it's about Jaime Reyes and his... affliction that he has, or I mean, I don't know. He looks at it in a lot of different ways. He's got this mystic scarab that's attached to his spinal cord, and I think in this last issue we got to kind of see how that kind of transpired. He's kind of that reluctant hero right now. He doesn't know. I mean, part of him thinks it's kind of cool. The other part's kind of horrified at you know, having to live with this basically another entity attached to him. And it's got Ted Kord in it, who is the original Blue Beetle from back in the day, and he's kind of playing the mentor and, you know, kind of guardian for the younger Blue Beetle. And they're taking a holistic twist with this this incarnation of the Blue Beetle, which is kind of reminiscent of the Daniel Garrett, who was the first Blue Beetle who had the Mystic Beetle. And this was, you know, of course, before Ted took up the mantle after he passed on. But it's just kind of a neat book. I like it. I like Keith Giffen's work. I mean, he did some great stories for the Legion of Superheroes, and he's done other stories and dealt with other characters. And just, it's an all-around fun book. You know, I haven't really had any bad times with it. And just one of those books, like I said, it's a fun read, and it's nice to look at. The art's good and the story's good, so it's you know, you kind of get it all.
Yeah, it's got that Keith Giffen humor in it too. I like that, the banter between Ted and Jaime.
Yeah.
I'm not like a huge fan of the two kids who are Jaime's best friends, like his supporting cast. Like, neither of them do much for me, but anytime it's Jaime and Ted working together, it's hysterical. Like, their banter back and forth is hilarious, and when action does happen in the book, it's usually pretty good. So there's a lot going on there, and then, of course, the involvement of Dr. Fate. That's a new twist that we saw in the DC Universe Rebirth one-shot. And through that first story arc, it didn't really get played up too much. But here at the end, it seems like they're moving right back into that. And I am like you. I'm all in for that book. I've been enjoying it as well. I think that it's a pretty good book. It didn't make my list, though. My number five book is Old Man Logan from Jeff Lemire and Andrea Sorrentino. The amazing creative team behind the New 52 Green Arrow couple of story arcs that were just outstanding and a real turnaround for that book. This is one just amazing looking book. If for no other reason, it's worth it just for Andrea Sorrentino's art. It is one of the best looking comic books being published right now. Just incredible to look at anytime he's doing the artwork on the book. And I say that I wasn't sure what to expect from it whenever it spun out of Secret Wars, because I read the original Old Man Logan from Mark Millar and Steve McNiven. And that book, it had some really like hard-hitting emotional stuff, and it definitely built a lot of tension around the idea that Wolverine hadn't popped his claws in like decades. But after... For those that don't know, in the original Old Man Logan, he is tricked into killing all of the X-Men. And when it's revealed that he did it, that because of the like combined efforts of all these villains, he takes this kind of vow of nonviolence. Like, he will not pop his claws ever again. And the story of Old Man Logan really builds off of that. And of course, this new comic, we're past that part. He's popped his claws, like, he does it regularly in this series. But I liked, especially in the story arc that I'm currently catching up on this book now, called The Last Ronin. He's gone back to Japan, and we're getting to see some memories from his time in the wasteland, back when he was part of a different dimension. And yeah, if I get into explaining that, it'll make you go cross-eyed, because and then I have to explain like all sorts of X-Men history and the business with Secret Wars. But suffice it to say, we're getting an exploration of some time that we didn't see in the original Old Man Logan story. And seeing all of that back history and seeing just how his relationship with Maureen, who would become his wife and mother to his children, how all that developed, how they really came to love and trust one another, being paralleled with a lot of the stuff that's happening in his present-day life. It's moving stuff. It's some of the best writing that I think Jeff Lemire has done since his Green Arrow run. And Jeff Lemire has done a lot of really good stuff.
Yeah.
But this book, this book is kind of, like, as far as superhero comics, this is one supremely great emotional journey. One that I hope they will continue publishing for a long time. I don't know what their long-term plans are for Old Man Logan, but up to now, this is the one X-Men book that I can absolutely recommend people be reading. And what's great about it is, even though every once in a while it will mention stuff that happens in Extraordinary X-Men or in the larger X-Men line, it's really not all that necessary for you to have read any of that. You can just pick this up. I would also recommend, like, read the original Old Man Logan, maybe read the Secret Wars tie-in series, which was like 3 issues long. Three to five issues, I think. And then just read this, or just pick this up and read it. I don't. It doesn't really matter. It's. I've heard people do that. People who hadn't read the original Old Man Logan just picked this one up because they were curious about it. I think my friend David did that without reading the original Old Man Logan. He just picked this up because the artwork looked great, and he gets pulled into the story. So it's a testament to how good that book is, and that is why it is my number five book of 2016, number five ongoing series. So moving on from that, Kelly, what is your number four ongoing series of 2016?
That would be Squadron Supreme from Marvel. I know it's kind of an oddity among other things. I'm sure there's not a whole lot of It's not a big fan base for this book, and anybody out there listening that might be a fan, I mean, you know, I'm in that group with you. You know, it's one of those, the Squadron Supreme series and the characters have always intrigued me because essentially they're, you know, Marvel's homage to the Justice League to an extent. And, you know, they started out years and years ago. They appeared in the Avengers, and they appeared in other books. And in the 80s, they got a really good 12-issue miniseries that Mark Gruenwald did that is still very popular. But, you know, this incarnation has been, you know, it's had its ups and downs. I won't say it was my favorite book to read every month, but there are a few, you know, they had issues that really hit home, and I really enjoyed it. I know it's probably, I think it's going to be canceled here soon. I think I don't know where I heard that, but I think it's going to be canceled, or it may already been canceled. But it's pretty much that. I think I've talked about it before. It just, you know, I'm a fan of anything, you know, when it deals with the C and D list and even some B list characters, you know, that don't get a lot of, that's not the mainstays, you know, the main characters, you know. I'm always a fan of the lesser known folks. So
it's been going for a while now. I think they even had a couple of Civil War II tie-ins. I'm pretty sure that didn't sit well with you.
No, those were the worst. Those were garbage. In fact, I think I read the first one and hated it so much that, I mean, I went ahead and picked up the next one because I'm a completionist and I want the entire series, but I didn't even read it. I just, you know, I think I looked through it, you know, I flipped through it and I was like, yeah, I'm not reading this. I just threw it right on the bottom of the stack and just, you know.
But that's another James Robinson book. He's one of those guys that, kind of like Dan Abnett, he does a lot of work between different companies, different comic book publishers, and maybe doesn't get quite the credit that he really deserves for being such a tremendous writer.
Yeah.
And even sometimes taking nothing and turning it into something.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, Dan Abnett.
Well, I definitely. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say Dan Abnett did it for Earth 2 Society, which was coming off of a pretty shit-tacular event in Convergence.
Oh, God, yeah.
And he turned that book around, but James Robinson has been known to do it for many a character. And I think that like his, I want to say he had some time on Earth 2 as well, if I remember right. But
yeah,
the stuff that he's been doing over at Marvel, really looking forward to some other stuff he's got coming up at Marvel, but we'll talk about that at a later time. But yeah, Squadron Supreme sounds like a book that more people probably should have paid attention to, but like so many Marvel series, it unfortunately wound up caught up in Civil War 2 when it probably didn't need to be.
No, I mean, it's one of those books that literally kind of, I think sometimes these books like Squadron Supreme and other books kind of fall between the cracks, and it doesn't get the kind of push that maybe it does need from Marvel in order to get more people maybe excited about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, like I said, it's on my list, and it's because I do like to support the characters when they give them another chance. And they've had, Straczynski did a run of Squadron Supreme several years ago, back when I had my shop, and it was great. I mean, it was when I heard that Straczynski was going to do it, I was like, oh my god, this is a match right here. Those are really good series. And again, with this one, if I'm right, it is getting canceled. I already called it, because when I picked it, the first issue up, I said, well, we'll see how long this one goes. I probably won't go too long, but, I'll be with it for its entirety.
Yeah, the issue 14 came out on December 21st. And yeah, don't know if any more are solicited past that. So I'll have to.
They'll probably wrap their story up before, of course, they cancel it. And I think that they're getting close to it. So
that's usually how it goes now. At least it will happen that way now, where they'll give them enough warning that a book is going to be canceled, that most of the time you can wrap up a story in a decently satisfactory way. But
yeah,
every once in a while that doesn't happen, and you wind up with something that's either cobbled together or something that, just ends without any any form of satisfying conclusion. But yeah, or they leave you hanging, which is just the worst. But I think most companies try to avoid that now. They're like, we don't want to just leave people hanging. But speaking of which, my number four book, actually, it's going to be books, because I kind of consider these two must-reads for any and all Green Lantern fans out there, and that would be Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps and Green Lanterns. And while these two books are not necessarily tied together, they're both absolutely outstanding Green Lantern titles. And this is coming from one of the biggest Geoff Johns fanboys out there. But I am fully prepared at this point to say that between these two books, it hasn't been this much fun to read Green Lantern stories since the lead-in to Sinestro Corps War. Now, I'm not saying the best since Sinestro Corps War. I'm saying since the lead-in to it. Like all that stuff that was happening between Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps that led us to Sinestro Corps War, a lot of that stuff is really good reading. Well, a lot of this stuff that's happening in the current Green Lantern titles is incredibly good reading. And that's saying something, especially after, Kelly, I think you and I have talked about this, the direction that Green Lantern was taking prior to Rebirth was not one that you or I were very high on.
No, I mean, there was a lot of hit and misses, and I think probably more misses than anything else in that last arc.
Yeah, the arc before the whole Renegade thing started up, I thought was pretty decent.
Yeah.
That was the Godhead crossover, and I thought Uprising, both of which were kind of masterminded by Robert Venditti. I thought both of those were pretty well done.
Yeah.
And Charles Soule's run on Red Lanterns was great. The Van Jensen Green Lantern Corps was great. And even Cullen Bunn Sinestro was good. It was just the main Green Lantern title just did not seem to be able to get its shit together. And they kept you know, trying different things, but it felt like they were trying different things just for the sake of doing it, more so than is there a compelling story to tell here. And I can tell you now that the supporting characters that were introduced in the last like couple of story arcs for Green Lantern were completely forgettable and at this point totally inconsequential because they haven't appeared again. And this whole that whole Krona Gauntlet thing just did not work for me, and that's why I was very hesitant about Robert Venditti continuing on with Green Lantern when Rebirth started up. But I am very happy to say that he has proven me completely wrong. This is some of the most outstanding Hal Jordan work that we've seen. He totally gets the character of Hal Jordan. He writes him in a way that is very similar to how Geoff Johns wrote him towards the end of Blackest Night. It feels like a true return to form for the stand-up leader of the Green Lantern Corps that we remember. And he still, you know, got that snarky, smarmy kind of attitude of Hal Jordan. Like that hasn't gone anywhere.
Yeah.
But I feel like what this book has now that it didn't have before is emotional payoff. We've built something that feels like it has emotional consequences for Hal Jordan, and feels like it genuinely ties into things that have come before, and gives us what feels like true direction for this title, which is something that it was floundering with. It did not have before Rebirth, but now it feels like this is a direction, this is heading somewhere. And of course, whenever you've got people like Ethan Van Sciver and Rafa Sandoval doing artwork, you can't really go wrong with that. And that brings me to the other book in that line, Green Lanterns, from Sam Humphries and Robson Rocha most of the time, but there have been rotating artists in there since it is a twice-monthly book. But what a twice-monthly book it has been. this most recent story arc is the one that really won it over to my list, and I had to put it together with Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. Because this whole First Lantern, or not First Lantern, the whole Phantom Lantern story arc has just been tremendous. Everything about Frank Leminski says to me, this guy is the next great Green Lantern villain. He has all the potential in the world to be a regular antagonist for these characters, and especially for Jessica Cruz and for Simon Baz. Whenever you hear their inner monologue, whenever they're talking about or how they see the Phantom Ring and how it allows you access to the entire emotional spectrum and it doesn't have to choose you as a bearer, like anybody can put that ring on and use it, that to me says this is a major plot line for both of these characters, especially given their lots in life. How Simon puts up a tough front, but he is very insecure in himself. And Jessica Cruz is fighting desperately not to give in to debilitating fear. And that is something that this book has illustrated so well is the dichotomy of these two characters who didn't like each other at first, but now they're working really well together as a team. And that's a testament to some really great writing from Sam Humphries to have taken those two characters that I know many a Green Lantern fan who did not have very many nice things to say about either of them for some time. But I think many of them are slowly being won over by putting them together and having them work together as a team. And it really does feel like a good a buddy cop kind of situation. Mm-hmm. I love the banter between the two of them, but I think the moment, and this is going to go down as one of the best moments of 2016 in comics, is there was a very recent issue, I think within the last two or three issues of Green Lanterns, where Jessica Cruz saves this little girl from during a Phantom Lantern attack. And the little girl looks at her and is kind of confused because she's never seen a female Green Lantern before. And The little girl looks at her and says, "Is that so? You're a Green Lantern, and that means I can be a Green Lantern too." And that moment just struck me. I was like, "This right here is one of the biggest moments. This might be quietly the biggest moment for the Green Lantern series in Rebirth. Maybe for their series this entire year."
Yeah.
In that we're establishing that yes, Green Lantern is indeed open to anyone and everyone.
Like,
anyone and everyone has the potential to be chosen to be a Green Lantern, and that was just huge to me. That was such a huge moment, and good on Sam Humphries for writing it. And that's what makes the Green Lantern books, both of them, so hot right now, is they truly feel like we're building towards something big, and it has that feel of the Geoff Johns era again. I hope it can keep it up, but for the last like 6 months of 2016, nailed it. All the way up to their most recent issues too. I have not once put that book down and said, "Huh, I really didn't like that." I have always come away from those books saying that was a really good read, and I can't wait to see more. So that was my number four. But now we move on to Kelly. What was your number three book of 2016?
My number three book was Wonder Woman.
An excellent pick.
It's almost like I don't know what else to say. I've really, you know, this book has constantly kind of been in my best of list that we've had this year. And I mean, if you're not reading this book, this is a book that you really should pick up and give it a shot. The story is just by far, I mean, excellent. The art is beautiful. It's a real, you know, I didn't know what to think when they were doing all the rebirths and how these books were going to kind of, you know, be laid out and what stories are we going to tell. I know back in the New 52 that Brian Azzarello and he took on Wonder Woman, and that series of Wonder Woman was also very good and well received. And it seems like most of the time when when they're relaunching their series or when they're setting up new books, Wonder Woman usually kind of lands on her feet and is always in good hands. And it seems like it's safe to say that, you know, this version of Wonder Woman is in good hands as well. Just like I said, it's a good story. Her being lost is really compelling. Seeing, you know, this very powerful character trying to figure things out, you know, and it's one of my favorite books to read every time it comes out. I usually leave it for the last. You know, just in case I read some crap. I mean, at the very end of my list, I'll have something good to read. So,
and you don't want everything else to suffer by comparison. Cause,
yeah, yeah.
Because Wonder Woman really does have the ability to do that right now. Greg Rucka is just killing it on this book. He and Liam Sharp together are just a dynamite package, just a 1-2 punch that it's hard to think of a time when Wonder Woman has been this much fun to read. I mean, there have been great storied runs with Wonder Woman, like Len Wein and George Perez working together is, you know, usually the classic that everybody turns back to. Gail Simone's run was good. The Mike Diodato time was good. Phil Jimenez had a great run on Wonder Woman as well. But right now, and Greg Rucka's had one before too. This is not his first time with Wonder Woman, but I'll save us a little time and say that Wonder Woman was actually my number two book on the list, where it's Kelly's number three. But for all the reasons that Kelly listed, plus the fact that it did something bold with its storytelling, because Greg Rucka is telling two different stories at the same time. He's telling one that's set in the present day, which is where we have Wonder Woman trying to find her way back to Themyscira and not being able to figure out why it seems to be closed off to her now. And then we have, on the even number issues, you have the year one story where Greg Rucka and Nicola Scott are telling like the definitive origin story of Wonder Woman. And both stories are just tremendous. Just outstanding storytelling from everyone involved. And Nicola Scott is one of my absolute favorite artists. So seeing her put her definitive stamp on Wonder Woman, defining her origin, defining who she is as a character at the foundational level, is everything I could have wanted and more. It was beyond thrilling, and just puts a smile on my face every time I would read an issue of Nicola Scott and Greg Rucka working together. And they have another book out there they're doing called Black Magic at Image, and I would also highly recommend people go and check that out. If you've liked their Wonder Woman work, go find that book. I think you might. It's very different, of course. It's a more adult-oriented book, but Greg Rucka is always a win. So just keep that in mind whenever you go into your local comic shop. Now, the ending, I don't want to give too much away because I'm struggling not to give people spoilers, but Kelly, you read the end of the Lies story arc, I assume.
And, yes.
And you saw the reasoning why she couldn't find her way home. How mind-blowing was that for you?
Very.
Because set my jaw on the floor. I had to like read that a couple of times. Like, is this oh wow. I wasn't sure where they were going with it. I was kind of like, how are they going to end this? Like, how is this going to, you know, wrap up? What's the explanation going to be? And then when I saw it, it was just, it floored me, man. I was like, that is freaking brilliant. I mean, Greg freaking Rucka does it again. Amazing. Amazing storytelling. Man, I can't wait to see where this goes. And, you know, the effect that it's had on Wonder Woman, especially that last issue. I just read issue 13 yesterday. And seeing the effect that it had on her, I'm like, man, this is some shit now.
Yeah. That's pretty, pretty rough.
I thought so, too. I was like, man, this is... Whew. It's an emotional roller coaster. Hell of a series and hell of a pick. My number three pick is another DC Rebirth book. Actually, books again, because I had to put both of these side by side because they really represent a major, major turnaround for a character who has been in desperate search of one for some time. And I think that DC finally cracked it. And that would be Action Comics and, of course, Superman. Action Comics being by Dan Jurgens and Patrick Zercher and several other artists as well as Superman being by Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason, with art from Gleason as well as art from Doug Monkey. Both books are shipping twice monthly. But I think what they really did, what really helped here, is they turned Superman into a family man, and they brought back the pre-New 52 Superman and Lois Lane. Allowed them to not only have a kid, but this book has given us the most intriguing, compelling, and just all-around best new character in DC Comics since Damian Wayne, and that is John Kent, the current Superboy. This kid is written like a perfect cross between Clark Kent and Lois Lane, and be it Dan Jurgens or be it Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason, whichever team is writing him, they have a consistent voice, and they make him incredibly likable. You can't help but like this kid. He is everything that we had hoped he would be. He's got the spunky, kind of smart-ass snarkiness of his mom, but he's got his dad's heart. And that is what makes this new Superboy so great. And it's also what's making Superman such a fantastic comic. Next to the fact that it's also got some just outstanding artwork. And I love the family dynamics. And I do have to put a special call out to one issue of Superman in particular. Superman number 7, which was such a simplistic issue. It was just the family out at the local county fair. And Lois has this deal with Clark that no matter what, he can't do any Superman activity while they're there. And, of course, you know that he's not going to be able to do that. And he tries to do it all covertly, and hilarity does ensue. And that last panel is just one of the funniest things that I have ever read in a comic. It was also one of just the most heartfelt and just pure happiness and joy wrapped up in 22 pages. It easily one of my favorite issues of this past year. And Action Comics has felt like a true return to form for Superman. It felt like that 90s Superman. Kelly, I think you were probably reading some Superman back during like the Death of Superman era.
Yeah,
when Dan Jurgens was writing it. You know, it feels like that. It feels like a return to that, and almost like they're doing their own riff on the whole death and return of Superman, which, with Superman Reborn coming up, it really does seem like that's where we're headed. But I absolutely adore both of these books. I think that they are as good as the Superman books have been maybe in 10 or plus years. Superman had all sorts of stutter step starts and complete misses through the New 52. But since Rebirth started, Action Comics and Superman have both been absolutely consistent to the point where I don't miss an issue of these. Like, if no other book comes home with me, Superman and Action Comics has got to be it. Like, I'm so invested in this story and in this this new family dynamic. And, of course, the larger Rebirth mystery is playing out there because of Mr. Oz, who appeared to Superman in the DC Universe Rebirth one-shot. And while he's also appeared in books like Detective Comics, and hints of him have been shown in Titans and even in The Flash, this is really where that story is going to play out. And I can't help but like just be like pulled into it. Like, I'm emotionally invested. Geoff Johns, you know, set him up, and Tomasi, Gleason, and Jurgens have just taken that baton and run with it. And there aren't enough good things I can possibly say about pretty much the entire Superman line right now. It's hard to pick a bad book in there because there isn't a bad book. Some are better than others, but yeah, Superman and Action Comics, that's cream of the crop. So go get those books. Absolutely my number 3, and it was tough to rank it there because I wanted to put it higher, but as you know, as we've said, Wonder Woman was my number 2 book. Now, Kelly, what was your number 2 book?
My number 2 book was Vision. The Vision. Visions.
Yeah, it's The Vision. That would be Tom King.
Yes. I can't say. This is another one of those books, like Wonder Woman, that just really, really hit home for me. I've always been a fan of the character. When I was little and first starting to get into comics, of course, Hawkeye was the first character I kind of gravitated towards. He was really cool, had a bow and arrow, had all these trick arrows, but quickly the Vision became just as important to me as a character because he was an android or a synthesoid. You know, it was one of those weird, I mean, he wasn't human, he was created by Ultron to infiltrate the Avengers and to kind of break them up or, you know, destroy them or whatever little plot Ultron had at the time. And he's always just been a quirky character trying to figure out, you know, what the human experience was or what it was like to be human. And, you know, he And this is what this book's about, really. It's about he, you know, creates a family and tries to kind of have a sense of normalcy and try to experience that. And all of these weird events pop up, and, you know, his wife ends up murdering the Grim Reaper and burying him in the backyard. And this is, you know, he's got a son and a daughter, and, you know, they're trying to figure out what it's like to go to school and to be a teenager. And it's just really odd, but it's very interesting to read. It's very, you know, it's almost like you're standing, you're peeking in the window of their house, and you're kind of watching the exploits. And it's, it was just a good series. Unfortunately, it didn't last, and I knew it wouldn't. Characters like this, is as much as I would love to see them have a ongoing book that goes for 20, 30, 40 issues, I think Russell and I have had this discussion off air that we're living in a comic book world where that's not the norm anymore. We won't see that happen that often. Maybe so with DC. I think DC has a tendency to kind of go the distance, but as far as Marvel books go, and that's what I'm kind of focusing on, that we won't see these books hit any high numbers anymore. And it's just kind of, you know, people come in and kind of tell a story. And I know with like Vision, the writer got a contract to go work at DC and had to cut short his.
That's right. Tom King signed an exclusive deal with DC Comics when he took over writing Batman, and that's really what brought the Vision to an end.
Yeah.
But I did appreciate Marvel for saying, instead of us just replacing Tom King
on the
book, we were like, no, tell your story. And DC was good about this, too. They let him work out his story, because he has said that the original plan for Vision was to go those 12 issues and see where they were. But when he signed that exclusive deal, it was like, okay, well, the book sales weren't bad. Book sales were fine, and it probably could have gone longer. They probably could have. I think they had the option to replace Tom King on the book if they wanted to, but they chose instead to say, no, we're going to let you end your story your way, and we'll just cancel the book there, and maybe they'll relaunch Vision in a with a different quote-unquote Vision from a different creative team later.
Yeah.
See, it's they'll look for a new visionary. Okay, I'm done now.
I get that, and that's, to me, that's a better way to go out than just poor sales. And I mean, we both have seen good books with poor sales that didn't make it, and Vision was obviously not one of those. And it was good that Marvel didn't just slap on another writer, an artist, and just butcher maybe, you know, another 8 issues out and kind of mess up what he had already established, which I would rather it end like that, and like you said, relaunch it in a year with another team and see what they can do with it, you know.
And, you know, this is a book that I'll admit this, I have not read any of the Vision, but after all the praise that it's gotten, like praise coming from everywhere, it seems, because, like, you know, we were kind of dogging out the old IO9 and BuzzFeed and all those other like hipster folks doing their comic lists. But I got to say, between them, CBR, Newsarama, and all these other folks that have done their list, Vision is like the one constant that's on every single list this year. And that's kind of amazing to me. Like, this is the book that is on every top 5, top 10, top 25, whatever list. And now, and of course, it's on ours too. So that should tell people something, I think.
It should. I've there's a Comic Book Girl 19 is a YouTube channel that I watch, and she's talked about the Vision as well this past year and so forth. And there's a lot of comic book related, you know, YouTube channels, and then you've got podcasts that they have talked about Vision, and that probably has helped get people to at least, you know, try it instead of just looking at it and going, oh, it's another book. I don't know a whole lot about it. But hearing about it, you know, it's like we've said before, if you've got some extra cash in your pocket, try something out. Try something new. And, you know,
And if you got some good Christmas money and a tablet for this this holiday season, I would encourage you to sign up for Marvel Unlimited. There's the plug for Ben Morris, because I definitely want to keep plugging away at this this service, because I use it, and the Vision is on there.
Yeah.
So if you've never read it and you're like, huh, there's a bunch of Marvel books I'd like to try out, Marvel Unlimited, there you go. It's $69.99 a year. And it's exactly what it says it is. Plenty of Marvel books for you to read. And if you're interested in more Tom King, a book that I have just started reading, I'm barely anyway into it, but I also recommend his Sheriff of Babylon, an absolutely outstanding series from Vertigo Comics, which we're going to be getting, apparently we're going to be getting a sequel to. Since he signed an exclusive DC deal, there will be more Tom King coming in both DC Rebirth with his Batman work and at Vertigo with the Sheriff of. We don't know what the title of the series is going to be next, but since Tom King is also an ex-CIA op, that's kind of how he writes his stories. He comes at it from that side, so I'm pretty high on the guy myself. I think that he's a pretty fantastic writer, and is somebody that I'm very much enjoying these days. And on your recommendation, Kelly, that's pretty much the final straw for me. Vision will be very quickly added to my list so that I can get on that book.
Yeah,
too little, too late, and everything. But you know, at least you know, 12 issues.
No, I mean,
that it's a complete story.
Yeah. I mean,
you're
definitely gonna.
No,
go ahead.
No, I think that's where, you know, the great thing about Vision is that, despite the fact that it ended, and that sucks, it's still 12 issues. It's a complete story. And for those people that are like, I don't want to have a long-term commitment, it's not. It's a 12-issue thing. It's like almost a 12-issue maxi, even though it was originally going to be an ongoing. So I'm very intrigued by all of that. Now I've said what my number two book is, which was Wonder Woman. Not really a whole lot else to add to that. We've said our piece on that book, and we know that Wonder Woman was just barely edged out Superman for me, and that was a real struggle, because I look at Superman and I'm like, man, this is such a great book, but what Wonder Woman is doing is kind of also revolutionizing her character, and it's also like her 75th anniversary. So to see the book in such good hands, I couldn't get past it. I couldn't say no to putting this book at number two. And I'm like you, Kelly. I put that book near the bottom of my stack every time an issue comes out, because I don't want everything else to suffer by comparison.
Mm-hmm.
But we've said all we can on that. So, Kelly, what is your number one book of 2016?
It is Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps / Green Lanterns. And like you just said about Wonder Woman, you know, you said, I think, pretty much, you pretty much nailed what was what's great about those two books. And, you know, if anything I can add, so far, everything that they've done between those two titles has really been spot on, and it's been such a good return to what feels like a Green Lantern book, as opposed to the Renegade stuff that we had prior. That really, it didn't really feel like that much of a Green Lantern book. You know, Hal being off on his own with the Chrono Gauntlet and his long hair and his trench coat or whatever it was. It was kind of neat at the beginning to kind of see, but then after a while it kind of wore off, and you were kind of like, I really this doesn't seem familiar to me anymore. And this seems like a definitely a, we're coming back to what makes the Green Lantern books Green Lantern, is that whole kind of camaraderie between a lot of the characters, especially Hal and the other members of the Corps, and of course, you know, Jessica and Simon, the two new recruits, and their adventures, and how well that those two have kind of evolved and kind of grown. And I agree with you, like with the little girl saying, "Oh, so I can be a Green Lantern too." That was a moment to me. I was like, "Yeah, you know what? That's kind of cool. I wish they would do a story where, like, what if a Green Lantern ring went to a child, or went to like a 10 or 11 year old kid, you know?" and maybe they'll do something like that down the road. But I just thought that was a really cool moment for them to do between Jessica and a you know, a little girl talking about, "Oh yeah, you could be a Green Lantern." I mean, you know, it's not just a guy thing, you know.
And that's like, yeah, like we were saying before, that is such a powerful moment, and one that, you know, I think Sam Humphries, I think everybody involved on the Green Lantern book should be really proud of that right now. And
yeah,
I hope that it's having the intended effect, or that it will later. Because a book like Green Lanterns, I think it'll be one of those that maybe people don't really gravitate to at first, but on a long enough timeline, more people are going to start coming to that book. And I've seen it even at my local comic shop, people saying that they weren't really too into the idea of Green Lanterns at first, but then they heard enough word of mouth from other GL fans that this was a book they needed to be reading. And you and I are like two of the biggest Green Lantern fans probably walking the earth. Like, we both, you sport multiple Green Lantern tattoos. I have just the one on my left arm. But we are big time collectors of GL. And I was telling my buddy Garner the other day that Green Lantern, of all the books that I've been buying since I became a regular comic book collector, Green Lantern is the only one that has been consistently on my list. I've never taken a break from it. In good times and bad, I have been a Green Lantern fan.
Yeah.
Even when I would admit that the book was not that good, I was still buying it. I was still reading it. I was keeping up with what was happening. I was trying to find the good among the crap at times.
It wasn't consistently bad, though. I mean, there were just some story arcs that maybe just were not hitting it, and you'd have to kind of suffer through a few issues. You know, it's not like it's not like one of the other books, like something where I would literally, you know, like, to me, like going back and starting out of, you know, like Supergirl back when they relaunched it after they introduced her in Superman Batman, where they were doing a lot of the variant covers and dual covers and that kind of stuff, and it was more flash than substance. And I love Supergirl so much, I kind of kept collecting it and reading it, even though it was kind of garbage.
And we've all done that with books. I know I've done it plenty of times whenever I was, and I would make excuses for books that weren't good, and I knew they weren't.
I've done that too, and I've gone back and I had to kind of say to myself, "Well, you know what? You're full of crap.
Yep.
You know, that book was bad." And, you know, and sometimes even the people that I may have kind of tried to build it up to, I'd have to go back and go, "You know what? I was wrong in my assessment of that series. It was garbage. I was living in a bubble and didn't want to admit that, you know, this book was not good." So I'm sorry for not being completely, you know, honest.
And that's one of my, if I'm going to have a New Year's resolution, that would be a good one, to not be so in the bubble anymore. To give my true, honest feelings on a book. If something sucks, just say it sucks. Like, you don't not obligated to like everything.
Yeah, I learned that when I had my shop. I mean, yeah, I was in the business of selling books, but one of the things that I didn't want to do is try to push a book on somebody knowing it was garbage just to make a sale. And if somebody did ask me if I'd read a book and it wasn't that great and they asked me about it, then of course I would say, hey, you know, it wasn't my cup of tea. I didn't particularly like this X or that Y. And, you know, but like I said, that's my opinion. Yours may differ. And, you know, just because as a salesman, as a comic book, you know, as a shop owner, you have to be diplomatic to some degree. But you definitely don't need to try to sugarcoat crap and right. sell it to folks. You know, it just, you want folks to come back to your store. And you know, so.
I said, but to that, people also have to keep in mind that whenever you give your opinion, it is just, it's just, you know, your opinion.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
it's just like whenever somebody asks me my opinion, they say, well, was this book good? Was that book good? Or was this movie or TV show, is it good? And I'm like, well, I'm never sure how to answer because I'm like, well, if I liked it, then yeah, I'm going to say that. I might say it's good. Or if I didn't like it, I'm going to tell you it was bad. Yeah. But I could easily be like, well, I'm not wrong, but I'm not, you know, privy to their tastes all the time. Like, yeah. I don't know what their taste may say. They may look at a movie and say, oh, that was awesome. Like, I have friends that absolutely love, say, for example, Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
They love that movie. Absolutely adore it. I did not. And yeah. When they asked me my opinion on it after seeing it, they were like, well, was it good? You can also find my review of it here on, well, I think you and I talked about it on a Place to Be Nation. We talked about it on a podcast. I did not have nice things to say about it. I did do a review for it on PlaceToBeNation.com. I believe I gave it like two stars.
Yeah.
If I remember, I was not kind in my assessment of that movie, and I've rewatched it recently in an extended edition, and I still didn't like it.
It's just a mess.
It is. It's
that's why I give it a meh.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, it.
It's not good. But like I said, if I say that to somebody who genuinely likes the movie, I'm like, well, clearly my opinion shouldn't really mean much to them because they're going to like it, and I didn't.
I've seen a lot of folks like where I work who have, they've seen it and they love it,
yeah.
But then again, they know nothing of comics. Really, they have their knowledge of comic books are really, really low. And I had one of my coworkers. I was with him a couple of weeks ago on his truck, working with him on a particular Tuesday. And he asked me. He said, "Hey, you know, you're a comic book guy. You obviously, you know, what did you think of, or did you like Suicide Squad?" And you know, I said, "Well, I really didn't care much for it. I mean, it was okay." And you know, and I said the reasons why, and I tried to do it as best as I could, explaining, you know, my reasonings behind it. And I said, that's just my opinion. I said, other folks, they may like it. And he said, well, I really enjoyed it. I said, well, that's great. You know, that's the good thing about movies. I mean, some people are going to like them. Some people are going to not like them. And, I think as long as you're diplomatic about other people and what they like and try not to, because that was, you know, that's the tough part sometimes is not wanting to tear down something that somebody really likes. And you know,
yeah, you do try to be diplomatic. That's
yeah.
True. I think the hardest question for me to answer is when someone says, should I go see this or should I give this any of my time or attention? I'm like, well, man, I can't make that decision for somebody. They're going to have to figure that out for themselves.
Yeah, especially, I mean, if you're going to go, if someone said, hey, I want to go see Suicide Squad, and, you know, you think about, well, you're going to go spend about $20 to go see it when by the time you pay for a ticket and snacks and stuff, it's like, I said, well, you got to think about the money. You know, you want to go spend it to see it.
Yeah, you have to guise it on your own interest level. Like if you're genuinely curious to go see something or read a comic, you should check it out for yourself. You should always form your own opinion and not really worry too much about what some, you know, snarky, smart-ass, know-it-all critic like myself has to say about it. Because what do I know? I'm just a guy who, you know, has experience in these things, and I write about what I think. That's all I can do, and that's but that's all it is. It's just my assessment, my opinion. If you put some value on that, then I'm flattered. But don't let that be the end all be all of what you decide to do.
I definitely agree, and I got a quick point I'll make about that to an extent. When they gave the Sentry his own book, and this was 2009, I think, I had a guy come in and he was asking me about this book. And he was kind of new to comics, never read, you know, didn't know a whole lot. But he kind of picked up that Sentry was kind of like a Superman type character. And I said, yeah.
Yep.
I said, it's not, you know, and he asked me, I said, it's not my book. I didn't enjoy it very much. And he was like, well, why didn't you like it? And I kind of gave him a couple excuses, you know, not excuses, but just reasonings behind it. And anyway, he picked it up. And he came back in the shop a couple of weeks later and told me he loved it. He really liked it. And I said, well, that's great. It's like, you know, and he picked up the next issue. And you know, he's kind of, like I said, one of those walking guys. But, you know, that just goes to show you, I mean, this person who was new to comics, he picked up this book with, you know, dealing with a Sentry character, and he really enjoyed it, and he read the entire, however long it lasted, 8 or 9 issues. I think it was supposed to be an ongoing, but I think they, you know, they canned it pretty quick. But, you know, there's a comic for every person, and that's what I kind of tried to have when I was doing my shop. And, you know, people that would come in and ask me about, you know, those classic 90s books, you know, Brigade or Wildcats or, you know, I'd say they're over here and, you know.
Sell them to you for 50 cents an issue.
Yeah, I mean, I sold them for whatever, you know. You know, 50 cents, 75 cents. And I had one guy who was just a big 90s guy, and he said, I loved these books growing up, and I just wanted to kind of relive my childhood. And he bought, like, you know, a bunch. So it's, that's the thing, is when we're giving our opinion, and like you're doing, like you're talking about, you're just saying, this is what I like, this is what I don't like. And your opinion and your thoughts may differ. So, I mean, you know, take what I said with a grain of salt and just kind of, so, you know, test your own, you know, test it on your own.
Always make up your own mind and don't substitute someone else's opinion for your own.
No.
Never do that, because you're shortchanging yourself. But
yeah.
That said, we've come to the end of this list where I will tell you my number one book of 2016, which was Southern Bastards from Jason Aaron and Jason Latour. It continues to just be the best comic on the shelf, bar none. And yes, this is a series that's near and dear to my heart, not just because Jason Aaron is an Alabama fan and he works that fandom into the series every once in a while. That's a small part of why I love this book. The larger part is that these are some of the most compelling characters that I have ever seen. From Coach Boss, who might be one of the best villains in comics right now, all the way down to Earl Tubb. He's now, of course, if you've been reading the book, you know that he's no longer part of the book, but his daughter is about to make a pretty grand entrance, I think. And just the spirit of this book, just the way it captures the look and feel of, like, rural deep South Alabama, just hits home with me, because I'm like, I've grown up in this. And they could have made, like, just a caricature and had it feel, you know, like they were poking fun at everything or making it seem like everything is terrible. But they don't really. They showed that, yes, there are some backwards ways of looking at the world here, But there are also some good traditions too. Like they show the ugly side. Don't get me wrong. They absolutely show that as kind of a centerpiece of the book. But they show you that while people can be terrible, they're also capable of doing good things too. And that's what I like about the book, is that you think that you know some of these characters, you think that you've got them all figured out, but then Jason Aaron will throw a twist in there and show you that, no, some of these characters, while awful people most of the time, maybe they have some really compelling reasons for being the terrible people that they've become. Maybe they didn't start out that way, but through choices or through circumstances, maybe a combination of the two, they become that. And it's coupled with some fine, fine, gritty artwork from Jason Latour. Maybe the best work of his career. And this guy has done some really great stuff. He's had a storied career as a young guy. I mean, he's still a young guy in comics, but this I think is going to be looked at as his seminal work. Like, he and Jason Aaron have just turned out one of the best drama books out there. And yes, it is a drama. There's no supernatural element to this. There's no superheroics, none of that. This is a Southern fried drama. And I love every single issue of it. And it is absolutely for adults. This is not a kid's book. Some of the stuff in that, in just the second story arc is like, whoa. Comic shops might have to be careful about where they put this one if they got little kids running around, because they're going to pick this up and flip open that second page and like, Mommy, what's he doing to that woman? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some of that. It's not shy. It is unflinching, and it is absolutely brutal, and I love every single issue of it. It has never produced a bad issue. It's never even produced a meh issue. It has always been top shelf, top quality. So, folks, Southern Bastards, number one book of 2016, and I, as of right now, fully expect that to continue on into 2017. So, that brings our main list to an end. But, of course, in every year, there are new series, and there are series that just barely missed making our list. So let's start with the book that just missed making your list. Kelly, what was your honorable mention for 2016? What just missed, and what kept it off your list?
It would be Supergirl. And for me, this is going to sound... I always hate to pick on a book because of art, but, you know, the first issue came out, and I was like, well, this art's kind of, you know, it's okay. But that's that whole really not being honest with myself. As every issue kind of came out, I became more and more like, ugh, this art is really not doing it for me. It's really taking me kind of out of the story, and because the story's good, the story's strong, and I've enjoyed the story arc that they're doing right now. It's just the art. And as sad as it is for me to say, that's what kept it off my list. I know that I think there may be a new artist coming on here in the next couple of issues, maybe, which if it is right, then that's going to be good for me at least. Some people may enjoy this art. I just don't. I don't. It just doesn't fit, you know, for me with what I think Supergirl, you know, it just doesn't work.
I'm with you on the art. I also like the story for the most part. I think Steve Orlando has been a good writer on the book, but I guess it's just too much to hope that Bangle, the artist who's been doing the variant covers, would wind up doing the interiors. If I had it my way, that's how it would go. But, you know, I feel you. I understand where you're coming from. For me, the honorable mention goes to a new series from Image called 7 to Eternity from Rick Remender and Jerome Alpena. It is a fantastic fantasy story with some absolutely gorgeous artwork. And I just finished issue 4 of it today, as of this recording, which is we're recording this on January 2nd. I just finished the 4th issue, which was the conclusion of the first arc, and it's gonna. I have to wait till March for issue 5. It's gonna be a little while, but given the level of detail in the art, I can understand why it takes so long. Because I know they want their story arc to come out on time when the arcs start up. They're like, we don't want delays in the middle of a story arc. So take your delay after the arc is finished.
Yeah.
So 3 months off from this book is pretty much what's going to keep it off of my list, because I'm ready for that next book now, because the cliffhanger ending. I was like, nope, I need that next book like right now. I need another issue. It felt like it needed another issue to close out. It should have been a 5-issue arc instead of a 4. But other than that, its first issue was pretty good. I thought that it wasn't the strongest first issue I've read of a series. But issue 2 was outstanding. Issue 3 was just balls to the wall amazing. And issue 4, again, got like really deep into some character stuff and gave us some backstory on a character called Patchwork that I thought was just incredible, heart-wrenching stuff. And very much parallels some of the stuff that's happening here, like in our U.S. politics right now. So I thought that was it's a poignant story that is very much like Final Fantasy and Dungeons and Dragons meets kind of a feel of Unforgiven, if you guys have ever read that. So it's got a little bit of that Western feel, but it's very much set in a fantasy setting. So there's a strong possibility that if it keeps that up, it may make my top 5 next year, or in 2017. It may be on the list when we do our list of 2017. But one more thing to mention before we go to break. Kelly, what was your best new series of 2016, something that's still relatively new on the shelf?
That would be Hulk by Marvel, which is basically Jennifer Walters' new series that is, unlike her previous series that we've seen, is not as lighthearted or quirky and funny. I think this is kind of spilling out after the events of this last Civil War and what's happened to her with her near-death experience and the death of Bruce Banner. I think we're going to see a real different Jennifer Walters, and she's definitely dealing with a lot. And I think it seems like a very interesting book to take a character that, you know, has always kind of been kind of lighthearted and carefree and just a good, strong female character from Marvel that is now kind of dark, brooding, and full of rage, I think, is the best way to probably explain it.
As a good Hulk should be. And yeah. I'm actually kind of looking forward to checking that one out myself. And it's from the little bit of the preview pages I've read, it definitely has a very different feel for She-Hulk. And that they're just calling the book Hulk is really cool. I think that that's a good step forward for Marvel and for the character. Not familiar at all with the creative team on it, but I like what I saw so far. So they may be household names by the time we talk about the book. Hopefully the book is still around by the end of the year. So we can
I hope so.
So we can keep talking about it. Like it sounds like a series that we need to absolutely keep talking about. But for me, best new series is an Image book called Kill or Be Killed. That is from Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. Now, most of you guys know that I've been high on this book for a while, that I've mentioned it on the show before, that that first story arc was a real banger. That was one that I am absolutely like all in for the rest of its run. And I'm usually hesitant on Brubaker and Phillips, not because their series aren't good, but because I feel like they read better in trade. And I was like, oh, well, this new series is coming out. Brubaker Phillips. Okay, I'm curious enough. I definitely want to read it at some point, but I should probably trade weight it. I read the first preview pages of issue one, the day it was coming out, and was just floored by how good it was. And I had to go to the shop, and luckily I was able to get an issue. I got the last one that was on the shelf. I got extremely lucky because it was apparently a highly anticipated book. It's got that old 70s revenge flick kind of thing going on with a slight supernatural twist, as Brubaker is wont to do. But I love how ambiguous he leaves it. You never are quite sure if the demon talking in the lead character Dylan's head is really real, or if it's possibly brain damage that he did to himself in a suicide attempt. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the demon is compelling him to go out and kill, or he will be killed. And that's the basic premise of it. And Dylan is one of those characters that you kind of root for him, but you also see him do some really shady and stupid shit. And it kind of leaves you scratching your head, like, why do I root for this guy? He's kind of an ass. But then you see him doing some good in the world, and then you see how it tears him up inside and how he feels about some of the bad things that he's done. And how he keeps trying to justify it in his own mind. It's really compelling stuff, and I think that that's what Brubaker and Phillips do so well, is compelling character work, and this is some of the best. So, Killer Be Killed is definitely high up on my list, and I think it should be on everybody's. So if you're going down to your local comic shop, the first trade should be out pretty soon if you want to grab that. But I would also check in with your shop and say, hey, do you maybe have those first four issues like in the back issue bin or something? Get on that book. It is definitely one that I think people will enjoy. But that brings us to the close of our first half. Those were our Kelly and Russell's top five comics of 2016, along with our best new series and our one honorable mention each. When we come back from the break, we're going to take a look at each of our five favorite minis, original graphic novels, or one-shots from 2016. So don't you guys go anywhere. We will be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And first half, of course, you heard me and Kelly each give our top five ongoing series, along with our favorite new series and an honorable mention thrown out to a book that just missed making our individual list. Well, in this half, we're going to be taking a look back at the top five miniseries, original graphic novels, and or one-shots of 2016. We decided to put those in different categories because, Kelly, I don't know how you feel about this, but whenever I see those lists of comics and they all get thrown together, I feel like they don't belong together, you know? I feel like if you're going to do one list of ongoings, you shouldn't mix them all in together with miniseries, one-shots, and original graphic novels because they tell their stories in different ways. One is meant to tell an ongoing story. It's episodic. It's going to keep going. It could potentially go on forever. And the other has a pretty set, you know, beginning, middle, and end. So different goals, even though they may use the same characters. But anyway, we're going to move on into our favorite minis, OGNs, and one-shots. And since, Kelly, you got to go first on the last one, I'll go first this time and start with my number five miniseries. My number five of this category is, in fact, a miniseries, and it's not very old. It's only in its first, like, couple of issues, and that would be The Unworthy Thor from Jason Aaron and Olivier Popiel. I hope I said that name right. I probably did. And Ben Morris, please feel free to correct me anytime. But in any case, this is the story of the Odin's son after he's become unworthy of Mjolnir. Mjolnir is being wielded by Jane Foster right now over in The Mighty Thor, which is another good Marvel book that people should be reading. But this is a story of him on his journey to find the hammer, the Mjolnir of the Ultimate Universe, which apparently survived the Secret Wars cataclysm and has landed in the remains of old Asgard. Asgard was destroyed some time back, but this hammer survived. It survived all the cataclysm of Secret Wars, similar in fashion to how, like, Old Man Logan also survived the cataclysm and made it to this the Marvel Prime Universe, as I am calling it, because I guess the whole 616 moniker doesn't really work now that the other universes don't really exist. But here he is on his journey, trying to, you know, find his place in the universe again. And when he finds out about this hammer, he sees an opportunity for him to maybe get back to being who he once was. I mean, it's a really emotional journey. It's full of crazy space opera-like action that you will only see in a Thor book. That includes Thor riding a space goat that he calls Gnasher. And Gnasher, from time to time, will have to go and fetch Thor's axe because he has a tendency to throw it and forgets that he can't fly anymore. So the goat has to go get the axe. And the goat is very loyal. And I'm kind of a fan of Gnasher. I think that he's a good goat. He's a good gigantic space goat. Like I said, that's the kind of insanity that's in this series already, and that's the reason I love it. Because it's that, it's also absolutely gorgeous, and in issue two, it took a pretty dark twist for a minute, when the Collector is revealed to be one of the primary villains of this story. And it's also tying back to some stuff that Jason Aaron did during Original Sin. So all those folks who've been waiting to find out what is it that Nick Fury whispered to Thor to make him unworthy, the hints are being laid here in this series as to what it was, and it feels like we're going to find out at the end, or we're leading up to that big Thor event where we're going to finally get the answer we've been looking for. And I'm kind of sad that this is only 5 issues, because this is something that I would actually read as an ongoing. It is Thor, as we all remember him, as Jason Aaron wrote him during the God of Thunder days. And it even has a few other callbacks to the God of Thunder days by having an appearance of Gore the God Butcher, who is one of the best villains, one of the best creations that Jason Aaron has ever come up with. And I would love to see more of that that character. I'm hoping that that's a hint that maybe he's going to be making a comeback. Maybe. We don't know. But we'll see. But that is my number 5 mini ongoing or one-shot. Kelly, what was number 5 on your list?
That would be the Flash Rebirth one-shot. For me, this whole Rebirth series that DC has done has been really good. I mean, in relation to, say, the New 52 back in 2011 when they launched that, I think this has been a lot better received, and I think overall it's brought a lot of people back to the fold, as far as those that didn't like the changes they made in New 52. And like with the Flash, I think there were changes made and a lot of the different characters and folks weren't too pleased. But the Rebirth line of books has been, from talking to a few folks that are old timers like myself that have been reading forever, they seem to really enjoy it. They seem to like it. And one friend of mine who is a huge Flash fan is really happy with the Flash Rebirth. And I agree. I think it's one of the ones that stands out to me in the Rebirth line of books, the little one shots they did leading up to the new lineup of books that were going to be ongoing.
I felt like that was a good one. The Rebirth one shot that they did, I felt like it was a good intro to who the Flash is as a character.
Yeah.
The part for me that really sold it, though, was that that last page when you have Barry run to Gotham City, mm-hmm. and meet up with Bruce, and they talk about, you know, the comedian's pen that was found in the Batcave.
Yeah.
And, you know, that kind of lays a big hint right there that Joshua Williamson is going to be crafting part of this story between Bruce and Barry as they get together to try and figure out the mystery behind what stole 10 years of memories from the entire DC universe.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, that is the Flash and Batman working together is something that not many people have really tried to do in DC Comics mm-hmm. over the years. It's something that is kind of like sitting right out there on the tip of everybody's tongue. Like, they're both detectives. They both mm-hmm. Have very similar approaches to solving crime. Why have they never worked together?
Yeah, that's a perfect point. And I totally, that's one of the things that I agree with you that I'd love about this, is the fact that you see these two. Now, mind you, I mean, Barry is a little jovial, but he's not, it's not like Wally. you know, Wally's a lot more lighthearted, I think. And in the past, when we had Wally and not Barry, I think there was that whole, you know, they never thought about putting them together. But I think Barry's a better fit, you know, to join up with Bruce.
And he absolutely is. Barry and Bruce seem like they would be a really good team to working together, because I mean, Barry is not the, like I said, he's not the jokester, the prankster that that Wally can be, and I mean, Bruce would have no patience for that.
No,
he would not put up with that for very long. But the way Barry approaches things and the way that Bruce does, you can see that there's a mutual respect between them. They know they're different. They know they're not the same person. That Barry has a far more optimistic outlook on the world than Bruce does. But these two working together, I think this is going to be a good team up, and it's one that I cannot wait to see what they do with it. I know they're playing the long game, so we haven't really seen much of it since the beginning of Rebirth.
Yeah.
But the big tease for it in 2017 is there, but we'll talk more about that in our next episode. But that's a big one that I'm very with you on that. I loved that last couple pages of that one shot. Now, my number four on this list of minis, OGNs, or one-shots would actually be another miniseries. It's one that's still very young, called Skyborn by Frank Cho. And yes, Frank Cho does both the art and the writing on this series. It's the... I guess they're mixing... different types of mythology for this. It's got a little bit of the Greek mythology in it, but it's also very much the Arthurian legends. Like, if you were familiar with King Arthur, it's... I forget. Are these the kids of King Arthur? Are they related to him in some way? I think... If I remember, they're taking way too long between issues. It's going through some delays.
I will, when the next issue comes out, I will probably sit down and read the previous two.
I think I'm going to have to.
Refresh my mind on it. Because, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was thinking, God, we've gotten two issues, but we should have a third one by now.
Yeah, it's undergone some delays. But, I mean, I guess I can kind of understand that, because Frank Cho is doing both the writing and the art on the book. So it can be a little difficult, you know, to keep it all straight. But, you know, he's a guy that's had a long history in comics. And I love that they're taking that kind of King Arthur legend and kind of creating, he's kind of creating his own little sequel to it in a way. They've made Merlin the villain of the series. And that's, yeah, it's got that whole dungeon, it's got that whole, you know, mystical dragons and magic aspect to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it does take place in the modern day. It's like these characters have been kind of in hiding for a little while. They've just been trying to either work covertly, like the girl you see in issue one, or, you know, like her brother in issue two, and who will apparently be the main character going forward. He's just been living his life in secret. Like, I want to stay as far away from all this business as possible. But when somebody finally found a way to kill his sister, he's like, oh, well, if that's happened to her, then, you know, this is a story of, I think it feels kind of like he's on a suicide mission. Like, he wants to get, you know, revenge for her, or avenge her death, but at the same time, he's also kind of happy because somebody's figured out a way to possibly end him as well, so he doesn't have to, you know, live forever. And just the way Frank Cho writes this, and especially his artwork, the biggest selling point is the artwork, because it is tremendous. I mean, Cho is, he's a controversial figure in comics, but you can't take anything away from this guy as an artist. He is absolutely one of the best modern style artists, I think, working out there today. So that was on my, I think that one probably made your list too, didn't it?
Skyborn was on my list. And, like I said earlier, I'm going to have to go back and reread the first two issues to refresh my mind on a lot of things when the next issue comes out. But between the art and the story, I mean, it's a really good little four-part. I think isn't it four-part or six-part?
It's a five-part.
Five-part.
Yep, so five-issue mini that will, I'm confident it will wrap up this year. I just think that Frank goes through his, usually his delays are not that long.
Yeah.
So,
it's a good series. Well worth either picking up the trade or, you know, if you can find the issues, the two back issues, you know, issues one and two, it's worth picking up.
And the next issue will be out on January 18th, so pretty soon. And it's kind of surprising that it's a teen rated book, but that first issue was pretty graphic.
Well, yeah. That's another one of those books you don't want to have just laying out for the kids to flip through because they don't hold anything back. Grace goes through a lot of folks in that first issue.
Yeah, she does. She, like, terminates with extreme prejudice. And we're talking like dudes' intestines are out, like, hanging out. It's not for the squeamish.
When you're talking about a throat punch, it's a throat punch. Mm-hmm.
I kind of wish she'd have been the main character of the story, honestly. I mean, I like where the story's gone. It's just when they killed Grace off, I was like, I really hope she's not dead permanently because, man, she was such a good character in that first issue. I mean,
yeah.
straight badass, just cutting through dudes. And I was like, man, I want to see more of her. And she did it all, you know, in a leather jacket and a pair of jeans.
Yeah,
cut through people that like they weren't even there.
Definitely a series.
It's definitely one that's entertaining, highly entertaining, and yeah, it's got a recommendation from me. But Kelly, what's number four on your list?
Let's see. The DC Universe Rebirth is number four on my list,
and that's
that covers a lot.
Yeah, it does, because
it's like I said with, you know, the Rebirth series itself, from what I've been able to gather from the local community here where I live, it's been really well accepted. A lot of people have really come out to embrace it a lot more, I think, than when they redid the New 52 launch, you know, as far as a lot of people saying it, this feels like DC. This feels like we're kind of coming back to a familiar place.
And that Rebirth one shot is really what set that tone for people, I think. That's something the New 52 didn't really do that. When they launched it, was we did Flashpoint, and as Flashpoint ends, they just launched Justice League and then just went right into it. Not really setting so much of a tone. They just let the books do that themselves. And it all had a bit of a samesies kind of thing going on for a while. Like, they all had kind of the same tone. But what I kind of appreciated about the Rebirth one-shot was that even though it was all written by Geoff Johns, each of the characters that he highlighted all had kind of a different tone to them, and an appropriate one that felt like the old classic versions of those characters, as well as being a great introduction or even reintroduction of Wally West. And it was something that was really unexpected to me, because when it came out, I avoided all spoilers. Like, everybody was kind of freaking out online the day it came out, and they were definitely spoiling who the central figure of the book was. But luckily, I avoided all of that, and I just picked the book up. I went home. I shut off all the, I turned the internet on my phone off. I, like, got away from my computer, and I just sat on my couch, and I read the issue. And when I did, I was just floored by how good it was. I was like, this is what DC needed. They have been struggling to get back on top and to find their footing, to find out who, to figure out who they are in the modern era. And once again, it's Jeff Johns to the rescue.
Yeah.
But when you, when in doubt, when you're stuck with a character, at especially at DC, if you just cannot seem to crack it, it's like Jeff Johns is just your go-to guy. He just knows what to do. And it this feels like his baby. This everything in Rebirth feels like this is Jeff Johns' sandbox. All these other folks are just playing in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the DC universe is all the better for it. We're all of us are all the better for it. We are experiencing a DC universe that I think we all hoped would happen in the New 52, but it just didn't. And you know, maybe there was too much oversight in places and too little in others. And Rebirth, I think maybe you'll agree with me that on this, Kelly, that it just feels more focused.
Yeah, I mean, it does, and I don't want to sound like I'm down on the New 52. The New 52 had its had a lot of good points to it, but
sure.
I saw a lot of, and I'm going to use the word old-timers again, customers of mine who were not happy with the New 52, and it a lot of them dropped books and kind of quit reading, you know, because they just really didn't feel like this was the DC they used to enjoy and like. But that being said, the Rebirth really did kind of feel like they kind of recaptured that magic that makes DC Comics stand out, you know, away from kind of the way Marvel is. And all in all, it brought people back into the fold and got people happy and excited about reading comics again. And I think overall, I think it's been a really good, like you said, Jeff Johns just kind of got in there and let's get the shop back. Let's start working and let's kind of bring things back to where it should be. Like he's done with every book he's ever kind of put his hands on. He's good at world building and kind of reestablishing the norm that everybody is kind of used to. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I kind of look at Marvel and I wish Marvel would have a rebirth of some sort, because even though they're doing these relaunches every year or so, I haven't felt for a long time like Marvel. I mean, it just doesn't feel like Marvel to me anymore. It kind of feels like, you know, something is definitely missing from their universe and their core of characters and just everything in general. I mean, you know, they've got a lot of good things going for them too, but I think just the essence of it is kind of missing. And I think with the New 52, that was what a lot of folks felt was like the essence of DC was kind of missing. And Jeff Johns just kind of got back in there and made the magic and made it work, you know?
Yeah, and I agree. Marvel needs something like that for themselves. They are kind of suffering. I feel like Marvel's kind of suffering a bit of an identity crisis right now, where they they just don't know fully who they are or what it is they're trying to do. And
they keep saying they want to be different, you know, all new, all different. But really, it's all new, all kind of the same. You're just repackaging something. I mean, you can't tell me that, you know, just because you made Thor a female and you made, you know, Iron Man a female, that's different. No, you just, it's the same character. You've just changed the sex of the person who's wearing the armor and carrying the hammer. You know,
I will say this for that. I felt like that was, you know, a bold step. And in the case of Thor, at least it was a good one.
Oh yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I like what they did with Jane Foster.
In the case of Ironheart or over an Invincible Iron Man, I don't know because I haven't read it. But I haven't read much Invincible Iron Man. I've only really just started reading the post Secret Wars Iron Man. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'll say this: it's not bad. It's pretty good. Bendis has a good handle on Tony Stark for the most part, but.
I'm just kind of burned down on Bendis. Bendis, to me, just, I don't know. That's just me.
I can see that. I can see how you can get burned out on his take on all these different Marvel characters. But I feel like where DC finally got their head on straight and decided that they wanted to make their universe feel like a cohesive universe again, Marvel keeps feeling more and more fractured. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Like one hand doesn't really know what the other is doing. They may run a tight ship as far as like what information is put out, and maybe they don't have people walking off books at the rate that they were doing under DC's New 52 initiative.
Yeah.
But it still feels like these books are all just flying all over the place, and a lot of people are just flying by the seat of their pants and don't really know how to put these events together. And like with Civil War II, as events go, like so many Marvel events, it feels like an event for event's sake. Like
it also feels like it's work for the fans that have to sit down and read through the. I mean, if you're, let's say you're a Marvel completionist, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with being someone who wants to get into everything. But for a Marvel fan who has to go in and read, you know, they want to read all the tie-ins. They want to read all of the little. It's daunting, and it's full of filler and garbage that just, I mean, like the two Squadron Supreme issues, totally unnecessary. And by God, if anyone's listening who bought those books because they're a completionist, I'm sorry. I'm sure you agree with me that you probably didn't know what the fuck was going on and why the hell did I buy these two issues. You know, it's work, and it's unnecessary.
Yeah, so if you want to do your event, that's cool, but don't involve every single book in it that doesn't have a reason to be there.
And don't be late. Every Marvel event, when it gets down to, you know, the last four or five issues, for some reason they lose their mind and they add another one or whatever, and it gets late, and then people get irritated, and eventually it's like, I don't give a fuck.
And it's a $4.99 book.
Yes,
like that's like your pricing is just way off. Your scheduling is bad. It's not gonna work that way. Like at least with and we'll talk about this at a later time when we discuss Justice League versus Suicide Squad once it's wrapped up. But at least even though that's a weekly book, it's $3.99 an issue. It's six issues long. You don't have to read the tie-in books to it, but the great news is there are only two books that tie into it, and those are Justice League and Suicide Squad.
Which make perfect sense.
Yeah, event is called Justice League versus Suicide Squad, so those are the books that tie in. Every other DC book is continuing on doing their own thing.
Yeah.
Doing what they were always doing.
Yep.
So you are not obligated to buy a whole bunch of books. And that, to me, is the better way to do your event. Or if you're going to do a line-wide event, you know, get everybody on the same page. And that can be a little like herding cats, I'm sure. But
but
if you're going to undertake that, that's going to be the requirement to making it work.
I think Marvel, in a lot of ways, they need to break out of this rut that they've been in with every one of their events where they do this. They really just need to go back and think about their customer base, their fan base. And, you know, we've talked about this before where you can price yourself out of, you know, you're going to price yourself out of business. You know, you're going to lose money and so forth. But if they would be more concise and say, okay, well, you know, we're going to do our next event. It's only going to tie into these two books because it makes sense for them to tie into these books, not everything else, you know. I think they're scared of – I think they're kind of – they're in this rut where they just – it works for them. Let's just do it. We've been doing this, you know, for the last 10, 20 years or whatever. We're going to just do our events. And somebody upstairs needs to go, hey, you know, this isn't really working. I mean, if you look at the numbers, I mean, I'm sure it reflects that.
I mean, if you're doing a big event like that every single year, maybe not even a year apart, like it's like these events just lead to the next event. There's no real break between them anymore, at least as far as Marvel is concerned. And after a while, I think that you get true event fatigue. And given the sales on Civil War II and some of the books that are outselling it, I think that that's going to be evidence that event fatigue has really set in for Marvel fans. I think they're tired of it. I know I am. I'm not even like buying a ton of Marvel books, but I can tell you that this constant stream of events, like, which has been in place pretty much since the original Civil War, is just, it's too daunting. It's too much. Can't do it. And I'm not gonna. And that should be Marvel's New Year's resolution. We are going to not do so many events.
We're going to cut them back, and we're gonna streamline our events and make them more, make it to where, if you make it to where folks want to pick up the tie-in issues, because it makes sense. Like, you know, like we've mentioned, DC does, you know, even when the New 52 was the norm, when they did events like any Batman event, it went through the Bat books. Green Lantern, same thing. You know, it didn't go through every other book. You know, it made sense for these tie-in books to coincide. And that's what people want, is it to be, to make sense. And because then you just, folks are just like, oh, you're just trying to grab another buck out of me, you know.
That's how a lot of what Marvel's done feels like. They're from everything from their events all the way to their some of their diversity initiatives. It doesn't really feel like they're doing it out of the goodness of their heart sometimes, as it feels like a cynical cash grab.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
That irritates me, because I'm like, yeah, I want to see more diversity in our comics lineup too. I want to see it not just in characters, but in the creative teams that are working on these books. But whenever I see what they do and see their initiatives in practice, it doesn't come off as we're trying to be diverse. It comes off as, you know, you're just trying to grab money from another market, and that's only going to work so far. That's short-term thinking. That's not like long-term fan building.
What you're doing is tearing down the fan base, and you're turning them away. You're pushing them towards your opposition, which would be DC, Image, IDW. They're going to go elsewhere to try to find just a story, just tell me a story, show me good art, and entertain me. Because that essentially what is a comic book. That's the job of when you buy a comic, you want to be entertained, want it to be a good story, you want the art to be good, and that's essentially just all it is. And Marvel is just shitting on it. They just, you know, they're in this horrible rut. You know,
they do need a shakeup. They need a good shakeup. And I'll say this: you said DC Universe Rebirth was number four on your list. I do have to go ahead and say that it's number one on mine. That is my top one shot of 2016. So we've said pretty much all we can about that. But moving into my number three of 2016, I'm going to go with Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles by James Tynion IV and Freddie Williams II. This was a six-issue mini, a team-up of DC and IDW, which is something that has been happening more and more lately through a few other miniseries. But this one really hit home for me, and the reason it did was because it showed that James Tynion can and does write team books so incredibly well. Like, he's done solo books up to now, and sometimes they've been kind of hit and miss. But that, he got the character of Batman, and more important, and I think almost equally importantly, he got all of the individual voices of each turtle and Splinter just right on. And it's pure pulpy comic book fun. It's not complicated. It's not one of those stories that's like, oh, this is like, you know, the great giant epic. No, it wasn't really like that. It was just a cross-dimensional team-up with Batman, the Ninja Turtles taking on some of Batman's biggest rogues, and, of course, the Ninja Turtles had Shredder and the Foot Clan along with them. So it's just a fun out there team up that people have been clamoring for years. Like, people have always wondered, you know, what would it be like to have Batman and Ninja Turtles team up together? And this, at least this miniseries, this was a really good one. There's one that's running right now that is more along the lines of the Nickelodeon Ninja Turtles series. It's not very good. I don't recommend that one. But if you can definitely go get the hardcover collection of this James Tynan and Freddie Williams II series. And I highly recommend you do it. I really hope there's a sequel to this, too, because this was some of the most fun that I had reading comics. It felt like classic Batman, the animated series, meets the 1980s, or the late 80s, early 90s version of the Ninja Turtles. Just straight up good times. Nothing horribly complex about it. The Ninja Turtles came through a cross-dimensional rift, along with Shredder and the Foot Clan. The longer the Ninja Turtles stay in Gotham City, though, the longer they're away from their dimension, the closer they come to reverting back to their original turtle state, because their mutagen is being rendered inert by that universe. So they have to find a way home. And that's really what the crux of the series is Batman trying to help them find a way home. But I think one of my favorite scenes of the year, though, came when Michelangelo introduces Batman to pizza.
Really? Come on. Bruce has had pizza before.
He's likely had pizza before, but as far as this series is concerned, that has not been a part of his diet.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not...
I'm sure Alfred doesn't, you know...
That's not really on...
pizza or...
I don't see that as being on the menu for Bruce Wayne, but... Mikey has found pizza that he absolutely loves in Gotham City, and of course he brought it into the Batcave. And Bruce tries a slice and is like, wow, that is actually really good. I was like,
to get Alfred on this.
Exactly. It's like, Alfred, I think we need to put in a call to this place on a regular basis.
It's like Barry going to Coast City for the pizza, you know, because Coast City has a great pizza place.
Exactly.
Apparently.
That was one of my favorite.
It sounds like a fun book, though.
It is. It's absolutely fun. It's one of the best reads that you'll see from 2016. And it's what made me a believer in James Tynan taking over Detective Comics, because when that series was running and was about to wrap up, they announced, you know, the Rebirth creative team lineups, mm-hmm. and said James Tynan IV will be working with Eddie Barrows on Detective Comics. And I had somewhat liked James's work up to this point, but it was really that Batman and Ninja Turtles series that said to me, I think this guy's going to do something special with Detective Comics. And it absolutely turned out to be true, because Detective Comics is still the best Batman book that you can be buying right now. But this was the precursor to that. It was James Tynan showing that he knows how to write Batman, and he knows, especially, more importantly, knows how to write a team book. And right now, I really wish he was writing Justice League or Suicide Squad.
IDW own the Turtles?
They do have the license for the Turtles, and that series is still running. That series is on into the 60s now.
Nice.
That's one of those long running series over at IDW, and the Ninja Turtles has gone through quite a renaissance as far as their comics are concerned. I can't really say anything good about their movies lately, but that comic book series, which is also co-written by their original one of their original creators, Kevin Eastman, it has absolutely hit a lot of the marks that those classic turtle stories were famous for. So that's another one that people should maybe go look into. But definitely get Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That was a fun collection. You can absolutely find that hardcover at your local comic shop now. So, Kelly, that brings us to your number three.
My number three is Reborn, and I think we've kind of talked about this book at different times, and
yes,
it's just a really neat premise, good story, and you know, it hadn't finished yet, of course, but in it's got a very, I'm trying to think of the right word to use, but it's, you know, all I can really think of is just, it's a good feeling book. You know, it's got that fantasy aspect to it. It's got the family feel to it. And,
it's a family book.
It's a family book. Yeah. And the main character sort of. And everything. So it's definitely worth picking up. Of course, I say that with a lot of the books that we talk about, but I mean, I'm being completely, serious and sincere when I say, you know, these books are worth picking up because they're good. They're good reads, good art. I love the art in the book. And again, it's an Image book. A lot of good stuff coming out from Image, as you know, Image just has this really good, I guess, good way of getting a hold of good projects and putting them out. So,
yeah, this is Reborn is my number two book, and it's a Mark Millar, Greg Capullo project. It's going to be a 6-issue mini. They're up to issue 2 right now, or issue 3. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a 3rd issue is out now, so they're halfway through this series. You should definitely be able to find these at your LCS still. And it's a riff on the afterlife. It's like, where do we go when we die? And Mark Millar and Greg Capullo have created this this world that has kind of a, you know, Dungeons and Dragons or Lord of the Rings kind of feel. Mm-hmm. But everyone who's died comes back as their like younger selves in this fantasy world, or at least they kind of look like their younger selves. If they come back as like human, you could also come back as a, you know, a fairy tale type creature, like an actual fairy, an elf like being, or sometimes in the case of this lady's cat, mm-hmm. it died and it came back as a humanoid like cat who is pissed off at her for a very funny reason.
Yeah.
I can't go into without spoiling it, but it's hilarious. And the quote unquote like devil of the series is a, you know, classic type fantasy villain, very much in the vein of Legend, if you guys have ever seen that Tom Cruise movie. But I dig the hell out of it, you know, because it's just one of those that's, it's got that family element to it, because as soon as the lead character Bonnie, like, you see her in issue 1 as an old lady, kind of talking about how she's tragically lost every member of her family to one crazy event or another, and she's not really sure what happens when she dies or what's going to happen, but when she does, she comes back into this world dressed in this like really crazy white outfit, and armed with a sword, and she's greeted by her, you know, dead father, who is back in his absolute prime and like in this like tremendous shape, and he's like, you know, you are the prophesized warrior who is going to come and save this entire world from the evil forces that are trying to take it over. But all the while, she's not just meeting her father, like she's looking for her husband, who also dies very early in the first issue. She meets back up with her her dead family dog, of all things, and it's just one of those great, sweet, but yet action-packed and just crazy fun stories to read. And of course, if you're familiar with Greg Capullo's art from his time on Batman, his time on Spawn, or even on a little-known series called Haunt, yep. It's very much like that. It's Greg Capullo drawing a fantasy book, and it is outstanding. I hate that it's not an ongoing series, but at the same time, I'm kind of cool with them just doing a beginning, middle, and end. It's got some of the Mark Millar-isms in it, because he does tend to throw some of his own little weirdness into his books. But if ever there was a place where it's well-suited to weirdness, it's this. So Reborn, definitely. Yeah, that's my number two on the list. We've already said my number one is DC Universe Rebirth. So, Kelly, that brings us to your number two, which was, I believe we've already crossed over on this one.
Yeah, it was Skyborn, and we've covered it, and I literally have nothing else to add to it. We pretty much summed it up.
Yep, Kelly's number two was Skyborn. It was a little bit lower on my list, but we've talked about that. I've said my number one is the DC Universe Rebirth one-shot. We've also covered the hell out of that. So, Kelly, what was your number one?
My number one was the one-shot Wonder Woman, The True Amazon by Jill Thompson. This book, I remember I sat and read it at work one Saturday. And literally, it was one of those books that just, man, I think I posted, this is why I read comics, is this kind of storytelling and art together just was perfect. And it's a retelling of Wonder Woman and her. Basically, her birth, her creation, her coming, becoming a hero, and it's really one of those ones I don't want to kind of get into the details, but I mean she does a lot of screwy things, and she's not, you know, she ends up having to make up for some really hard mistakes that she's made, in her life, and you know, you do something bad, you're trying to kind of make up for that. That's kind of how this story kind of transpires, and it's just a really good book. And I got it in a hardcover, which I'm glad, because a lot of times, I mean, these kind of books I like to put up on the shelf and display and be able to pull off the shelf whenever I want to, and that's definitely one of those ones that it's well worth, if you can get a hard of the get the hardcover, it's definitely worth it. And like I said, Jill, the art, if you're a fan of Beast of Burden, you know, she did the art there. This is the same kind of art, and it's just beautiful. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah. I picked up a copy of this. I have still not sat down to read it, but when I heard Jill Thompson was doing a Wonder Woman original graphic novel, I was like, yeah, I gotta get that. And I don't care if it's not written well. I was like, the artwork alone will make it worth buying. But what little bit I've read of it, it sounds like she writes dialogue very well. She has crafted a strong story that's been on a lot of best of lists that I've seen. And I do remember you putting that tweet out there, Kelly, saying that this was one of the best comics you read. It was a reminder of why you love to read comics. And I'm like, man, that's the mark of a truly great book. If you put it down and say, man, that is exactly why I got into reading comics, was for stories like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you want.
Yeah, that's the kind of, and you don't always get it. It's not like, you know, it's not, you don't get that every time you read a comic, but every once in a while, one will really kind of slip through, and it'll hit that mark, and you're like, you totally connect with it, and that's how that book was for me. And I mean, there are quite a few books that have done that to me over the years, but that's kind of added to that list now of books that have really hit me on a comic book level, and I'm like, man, it just, you got to read this. This is good stuff, you know.
It's when we finish recording this podcast, that's probably the first thing I'm going to do, is I'm going to go pull that hardcover out, because I don't have any more in my regular stack for the week to read. So it's time to pull that one out, read it, and probably wind up falling in love with it just like you did. I don't see that. I don't see that going any other way, because I think we're both kind of on a real Wonder Woman kick right now, and if we're getting good Wonder Woman comics, which we definitely are,
yeah,
then Man, it's a hell of a time to be a Wonder Woman fan. So, guys, go get Wonder Woman: The True Amazon by Jill Thompson. I think that I think it's going to make fans of a whole lot more people. And it's I haven't even finished reading it yet, but it's going to be one of those that I think I'm going to probably wind up like Kelly and say, "Yep, this I see exactly why this made his number one spot on the best miniseries, original graphic novels, or one shots of the year for 2016." And that, with that, that brings us to the end of the episode. We have counted down quite a number of comics that were really good in 2016. So, see, there were good things that happened last year. Plenty of them. And we've given you plenty of stuff to go seek out if you haven't already. Go check these books out. Talk to your local comic book shop owner. Maybe they have something else that they want to add to it. So I highly recommend every book that has been listed here that we've talked about. We'd love to hear what your lists are. And after you've listened to this episode, you'll be able to find the posting for it in the Place to Be Nation comics group that you can find on Facebook. You can hit us up on Twitter. Of course, you can find me at Russell_Sellers. You can find Kelly at HKP2814. Hit us up. Tell us what your favorite ongoings or your favorite miniseries or one-shots, original graphic novels. Just what were you reading in 2016? What stood out to you? What was your favorite? That's what we want to hear about. We want to hear what you loved, because that's what we need to do in 2017. We need to put away all the negativity and all the crap that came along with 2016, all that baggage. Yes, we know that it sucked. We know that it was a rough year for a lot of people. But let's reflect on some of the good things that we can find in it, and then let's start looking at the good stuff for 2017, because there is a lot out there that we can still love, we can still enjoy, and that we should absolutely celebrate with each other. And you know what? I'm always looking for new books to read, new series that maybe I haven't heard of, because I don't know about everything. Somebody's got something that I haven't heard of, I'm sure. So definitely hit us up. And if you want to do the email thing, you can hit me up on my Place to Be Nation email. You can find me at russells@placetobenation.com. I do check that email very periodically. So if you want to send a suggestion about what kind of show that we should do, do not hesitate. We would love to hear show suggestions. We will we'll definitely take them into account. Kelly, what is your final word on the year that was 2016 before we close it out?
I don't really know. I think for 2016, as far as I'm just glad to have made it through another year. I'm glad that I'm still here. I'm glad I've got I think the word for me would just be I'm hopeful that 2017 will be a good year, and it'll have its ups and downs too, but I'll be happy to get to the end of it. I mean, I'm 47 years old, and I've got hopefully many, many years down the road, but I'm just hopeful and thankful every time, I get through another year. So it's 2016 had some rough parts, and 2017 is gonna do that too. And that's what we need to kind of realize, is that celebrities and people of notoriety that we enjoy or like or admire, they get up in age too, we all kind of have to come to that conclusion that things do come to an end. And just be thankful of the people you're around. I got good friends like Russell and all of my friends around here and my family. So I just try to take each day in stride and just thankful. Yeah. And I think that's what a lot of people just, if you just kind of look at it that way, it makes things a little easier to kind of, if a year's been rough, to kind of look at the year and go, okay, well, I made it through it, and that's good.
I'm like you. I'm thankful for all the good things that happened in 2016, because there were many. Like, we launched this show.
We
got this show off the ground, and very happy and excited to have, I don't know how many people are really listening to our show, even if it's just our close friends that are doing it. I'm still happy to have every one of them listening. I'm thankful for everyone that has been supportive of the show. Everybody from the Nick and Greg over at the Hard Traveling Fanboys to Todd Weber, who is our producer and editor. Thanks to everything he's done for the show in its inception in its first year. The girls over at Geek and Sassy, Jenny and Miranda, for always being fun to listen to and always giving us the plug. Like we always appreciate that. And of course to all the folks that run placetobenation.com, from Justin Rosero to of course Brad Warren, all those guys, everybody that's running the site. We've had some good times, folks. We had some good times in 2016. We got some more big stuff planned for 2017. And, of course, the month of January is not over yet. So just like we talked about a little earlier in the show, next episode we are going to look forward into 2017. We're going to do maybe a little bit of tea leaf reading, not much. We're just going to talk about the things that we know of that are coming up in comics. We're going to talk about what we're excited for from all the different companies, talk about the comics that we most want to read, and then we're also going to talk about what we're excited for in comic book television and, of course, comic book movies, because 2017 is going to be another heavy, heavy loaded comic book movie year. 2016 had a ton of them, but 2017 is really bringing the thunder. There's a lot of stuff coming, and I don't just say that because there's a new Thor movie coming. But with that, we are signing off for another episode of Seller's Points. Thank you guys for listening all through 2016, and we look forward to all of this great, cool stuff that's going to be happening this year. Happy New Year to you and yours, and we'll see you next time.
A long December, and there's reason to believe maybe this year will be better than the last. I can't remember the last thing that you said as you were leaving. Oh, the days go by so fast. And it's one more day up in the canyon. And it's one more night in Hollywood. If you think that I could be forgiven, I wish you would. Na 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 na. Smell of hospitals in winter, and the feeling that it's all a lot of oysters. But no pearls. All at once you look across a crowded room to see the way that light attaches to a girl. And it's one more day up in the canyons. And it's one more night in Hollywood. You might come to California. Think you should. Na 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 na. Sometime after 2 a.m. and talked a little while about the year. I guess the winter makes you laugh a little slower, makes you talk a little lower about the thing you could not show her. And it's been a long December, and there's reason to will be better than the last. I can't remember all the time. I try to tell myself to hold on to these moments as they pass. And it's one more day up in the canyon, and it's one more night in Hollywood. So long since I've seen the ocean, I guess I should.